G'day, my name is James Atfield, host of The Green Place. Carbon markets and reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation in developing countries, or REDD Plus for short, are instrumental in global climate change mitigation efforts. Carbon markets facilitate the trading of carbon credits and create economic incentives for emission reductions across industries. REDD Plus goes beyond deforestation reduction, incorporating sustainable forest management and community livelihood improvements. When integrated, these mechanisms synergize, as REDD Plus projects can generate carbon credits tradable in carbon markets. This blend encourages forest preservation, biodiversity conservation, and sustainable development, showcasing the potential for market-driven approaches to address climate change and promote a greener, more sustainable future. Given the importance of aligning businesses with environmentally sound practices, this week we are sitting down with Tom Herman of Metacarbon. Tom, welcome to The Green Place.
Thank you, James. It's fun to be here. I look forward to talking about REDD Plus. It's a great topic, almost as good as carbon markets in general.
So could you tell us what the primary objective of REDD Plus is, and how does it contribute to the goal of climate change mitigation?
Sure. Well, REDD Plus stands for reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. The plus is about the co-benefits. And it's really a global initiative that addresses climate change by working to preserve forests. They're incredibly important in the carbon dioxide balance of the planet. They soak up a lot of carbon dioxide, but they also provide a lot of co-benefits. Those are co-benefits for humans and animals. And some of them go along the lines of the Sustainable Development Goals, like SDG 13, which is climate action. A lot of REDD Plus projects also address SDG 15, which is life on land. They can address no poverty, which is SDG 1. SDG 12 is responsible consumption and production. And interestingly, a lot of them also address SDG number 5, which is gender equality. So really, REDD Plus is a comprehensive type of protocol that has a lot of really detailed ways of measuring the environmental benefits as well as the co-benefits. And it's sort of a full circle from the forest to the people to the forest. It's a really great way to address climate change. And, you know, when you think about climate change in general, I like to use an analogy of a bathtub, where the atmosphere is the bathtub and the water in it is the carbon dioxide. And if that bathtub is, in our case, pretty full, but we're continuing to run water out of the tap and it's overflowing, you got to very quickly do two things, right? You got to turn off the tap so that we stop overflowing the tub. And then you've also got to pull out the drain plug so that it drains. When you think about REDD Plus, or you think about preventing deforestation, what we're talking about is turning off the tap. It's like changing to an electric car where you don't emit as much. It's really good. We've got to reduce our emissions. And a major source of emissions on Earth every year is deforestation. When forests are cut down, they emit a lot of carbon, and they also represent part of the drain plug, insofar as in addition to emitting a lot of carbon when they're cut down, they also absorb a lot of carbon when they're left up. So they empty the tank if we leave them in place, and they fill the tank if we cut them down.
Nice. I like the bathtub analogy. It's a good one. Can you provide some examples of success of REDD Plus initiatives globally and their impact on reducing emissions and deforestation?
Sure. One of the ones that I like to talk about, one of the most interesting ones for me, is from Kenya. It's a REDD Plus project in the Chulu Hills. We actually sell on one of our clients' websites, Stand for Trees, we sell carbon offsets from the Kasigao corridor, which includes the Chulu Hills. The Chulu Hills are a cloud forest up above a dry, arid forest where a lot of people live and a lot of animals, elephants, rhinos, and other big animals. But because the Chulu Hills were deforested, they were cut down to create charcoal and for other purposes for grazing animals and so forth. All of the water in the Kasigao corridor dried up. The cloud forests on these hills, in normal circumstance, actually suck moisture out of the atmosphere and bring it down and help to change the climate and actually generate water that feeds the streams and the underground aquifers that would serve the communities living in the dry forest, the arid forest below. So when they're cut down, all the streams dry up, and then they don't have any water to drink or to feed cattle and other things. So it's really terrible. And what happened in the Casigao Corridor, one of the first things that they did is they tried to educate the local community about the value of the cloud forest and other things that they could do, some circular agriculture stuff. And if they replanted the forests, that they would in fact start to get water back again and they could water their crops. And through the education process and by engaging the local indigenous communities in doing the work, they provided jobs, they regrew the cloud forests. Over the course of 10 years, the streams came back and the communities are now teaching by word of mouth or whatever means they have of teaching the next generation, the importance and the value of the cloud forests and the hills and the natural community. So it's really an amazing project that benefits with jobs, benefits with education, benefits with improved crops, improved livestock, improved water supplies, and it's all paid for because they're able to sell carbon credits. That's the financing mechanism for making this stuff happen.
It's amazing how quickly nature can start to be restored. If it's only 10 years, I expected that to be a much longer time frame before we start to see some really positive outcomes. But 10 years, that's really quite achievable, and everyone can see the benefit within their lifetime. It's amazing.
If you don't listen to a podcast called The Bionic Planet, it's amazing. It goes into deep details on lots of different areas of climate and climate action. And they do a lot on Red Plus, and they've done an incredible series on the Chulu Hills and on the Casigao Corridor, amongst other projects. They talk a lot about regenerative ag and the kinds of carbon credits that you can generate to help finance a transition to a regenerative agriculture system in the United States or in Africa. Really great podcast.
I'll have to check it out, and I'll encourage everyone else to check that out also. How does the success of Red Plus contribute to broader climate change mitigation goals on a global scale?
Well, Red Plus is the largest source of carbon credits today for voluntary carbon markets. It's sort of like the granddaddy of carbon credits. And in fact, the project that I just mentioned to you, Casigao Corridor, which has been developed by Wildlife Works, is the very first Red Plus project that was registered. And that's why they can talk about what's happened, you know, over the last 10 to 15 years. So there's a lot of issues that people have brought up with Red Plus, and I think we'll get into them, and some of them are valid. But the bottom line is Red Plus has been knocking it out of the park in terms of the benefits that it's been generating based on the cost of doing these different kinds of projects. By reducing emissions from forests, it's helping countries hit their climate goals, like those set in the Paris Accord. But it's not just about cutting carbon. As I mentioned, it's about improving lives, protecting biodiversity. I'd like to say it's a triple win. It's a win for the planet, it's a win for the local people, and it's a win for all the biodiversity, the critters, the animals that live in the forests. And if I didn't mention at the beginning, it's the biggest source of carbon offsets in the voluntary carbon market. So it's really huge.
Talking about, you mentioned carbon offsets. I hear that mentioned quite a lot when discussing climate change mitigation. So can you provide a little bit of an overview of what that is and what its role is?
Sure. If you go back to the bathtub analogy, carbon offsets are a market mechanism that make it easy for one organization to apply resources to reducing atmospheric carbon in the most cost-effective way through partnerships. So basically, if I'm Delta Airlines and I need to reduce my emissions by 1 million tons a year, and it could even be more than that, and it's going to cost me $1 billion to refit all of my airplanes and design a new kind of fuel and so forth to reduce it that much. But as an alternative, for $1 million, I could pay someone else to absorb or reduce emissions by that same amount. Then it means the most cost-effective, quickest way for humanity to reduce emissions is to go through a market mechanism to the lowest cost, fastest, most effective way to do it. And one of the complaints that people have, which I know you're going to ask about at some point, one of the complaints is that, well, isn't that basically just giving Delta an excuse to continue to emit carbon and pollute the atmosphere? And additionally, to each of Delta's customers, like you or me, if you've ever flown in the last few years, and you probably have, and I have, then it's giving us an excuse to continue to pollute. And it's also giving an excuse to all those people who are complaining about it. And they're also continuing to pollute because they use iPhones that are manufactured and shipped around the world. Many of them drive cars. All of them use electricity and heating. And they're all complaining about Delta not reducing emissions. Well, Delta has three options. It can shut down, which it's not going to do, or it can continue to emit and do nothing about it, or it can continue to emit carbon and do something about it. And in fact, it is. They're one of the largest purchasers of biojet fuels. So they're working on that. They're improving their entire infrastructure. They're making their planes more efficient, but they can't get to zero emissions immediately. But they can get to net zero by continuing to help planet Earth in other ways by providing financing to organizations like the Chulu Hills that need the money, that can absorb tons and tons, millions of tons of carbon by protecting forests and replanting forests. So carbon credits are a market mechanism to help allocate capital to the most efficient ways to reduce carbon emissions for humanity.
Great, thanks. That's a really good explanation, and giving us real life examples is really handy. As you alluded to, I am going to ask about some of the criticisms and challenges associated with carbon offsetting. So sure. Can you walk us through what they are and how they're most commonly addressed?
Sure. So some of the most common criticisms or challenges associated with REDD+ and carbon offsetting in general is questionable effectiveness. There's issues around double counting. There's issues around the topic that we just discussed, which is basically giving people an excuse to pollute. They pay to pollute. And then there's also a lot of questions about the impact on local communities. I'm going to address these mostly with regard to REDD+, because a lot of the REDD+ projects that we've heard about in the media being criticized are probably top of mind for your listeners. When it comes to carbon removals, like methane at landfill, those are very easy to measure. The environmental benefits are extremely clear. You just put a flow meter on the methane capture and you know exactly how much you've captured, what it would have gone to, and you can convert it into energy. So it's really simple. The questionable effectiveness question with REDD+ has to do to some degree with being able to measure the impact of not doing something. So when you register a new REDD+ project, you have to have some sort of indication or estimation of what the likelihood is that the forest would be cut down, because the purpose is to avoid deforestation and degradation. And nobody wants to invest money protecting a forest that doesn't need protecting. So you really want to make it as efficient as possible. Capital markets, again, look for efficiency. They want to know, if we didn't protect this with REDD+, what would happen? And that's the equivalent of what they call measuring a baseline. How much carbon is there and how likely is it to be emitted? And if you screw around with that baseline by saying it's too high, it's very, very likely that all this carbon is going to be emitted, when it really isn't that likely, then you can make a lot more money. And when these projects first started over the last almost 20 years, there wasn't as much information from satellites that was more empirical and easy to collect at scale. So it was much harder to really defend what forests were going to be cut and which ones weren't. And in some cases, when you protect one section of forest, 100 hectares or 100,000 hectares here, all that happens is it leaks and someone deforests the 100,000 hectares next door instead. So it's not really a benefit. So they look at leakage. How likely is it to last for a long time? They call that durability. Is the forest going to be burned down or is it going to be cut down later anyway? And then is it additive? Would it have been taken down if not for this climate financing for these carbon credits? And there's lots of opportunities to mess with that. The methodology REDD+ has been updated every few years. It gets better and better. And the technology available to measure baselines and do predictions on what areas are being and are going to be deforested have improved with AI and satellite imagery. So these projects have gotten much better. And a lot of the issues that you've read about in the newspapers tend to rely on old data and old methodologies. They have improved since, because REDD+ and the REDD+ community is really committed to having the most scientifically sound means of facilitating a reduction in deforestation. I think there's some questionable motivations for some of the people writing these real hit jobs. Having said that, they're not always completely incorrect. And there have been some projects that have been found to have played games with the numbers a bit, and that's not good. We need to improve. They are improving, but let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's make sure that Red Plus improves so that we can have the credibility that we need to bring this incredibly important climate financing to these communities that need it in the global South and, you know, potentially in the global North, where there's also a lot of indigenous communities that live in forested areas.
So how does your company, Metacarbon, fit in with all of this?
Well, Metacarbon at its core is a tech-driven facilitator in the carbon markets. We try to streamline buying and selling and managing of the carbon credits for the projects, as well as for the brands that we work with, to ensure that all the carbon offsets and initiatives that we're involved with are transparent and really generate impact. Our platform uses blockchain, and we use that to record every transaction in a public, immutable way to provide clarity and to address sustainability commitments of our clients while reducing risks of greenwashing. Really, we try to make it fun and easy for brands to engage their audience on the topic of climate change, and we help carbon projects to promote themselves and maximize the amount of revenue they can generate. By predominantly offering Red Plus credits, we not only support the reduction of deforestation, but also we champion co-benefits that these projects bring to communities and the ways in which they promote biodiversity. Educating our consumers, or educating consumers in general through the brands that they trust, which we then work with, we can help them to learn about Red Plus and about climate change and about the tangible impacts of the carbon offsets that they purchase. And with each sale, we have a small step, because we sell in small denominations, towards helping to conserve the planet.
Great. What a brilliant organization. So what role does Metacarbon play in promoting sustainable practices like Red Plus?
Well, we help companies measure their carbon footprint, and we help them reduce their carbon footprint, and then we help them offset their carbon footprint. So in that third step of offsetting, we'll tell them about carbon projects that might meet in an authentic way the needs of their organization. So if we're working with a company that roasts and distributes or sells coffee, you know, we would help them to buy carbon offsets from the coffee growing regions of Brazil, Indonesia, and Colombia, where they source their coffee. If we were working with a furniture manufacturer like IKEA, for example, we would encourage them to get carbon offsets from the northern boreal forests of Europe, where they get their wood pulp. And then we connect those carbon offsets with animals so we can make them more personal and engaging. So, you know, there's spotted owls in the northern boreal forest. So when we retire carbon for a furniture manufacturer, we'll create a spotted owl NFT that represents the carbon offsets, and we can deliver that to the customers of our brand partners and make it something collectible and fun and engaging and teach them facts about the spotted owl and how the furniture brand is helping to protect their habitat and what it does for the local community. And the same with coffee. So I don't know if you're familiar with any of the animals like jaguars that live in South America in some of the coffee growing regions. We could do an animal, or a giant sloth is the one that we do for coffee. We're right, doing a conference in Qatar right now. And for them, we're doing a scimitar animal as the NFT collectible that they're going to give out with the carbon that they offset.
That's amazing. It sounds like Metacarbon has a very big future ahead of it. Is there a website that people can go to if they want to learn more about the organization?
Sure. You can go to one of two websites. One is meta-carbon.com. The other is standfortrees.org.
That's great. Thank you, Tom, for chatting with me today.
Sure, James. It was fun.
That's it for this episode of The Green Place. Visit greenly.co to learn more about environmentalism.